by 800 and 33, but we are on top of that situation. We are working with education. You see that at 227, which they are projecting to overspend by. We are engaging with them so that we understand that and we move on the same page as exactly what that is the cause. Same applies with health, right? We are engaging with health around the financing of the financing of their salary bill, because in the main that amount it comes from that area, right? We are engaging with them there in that area. We believe that we shall refine by the end of the financial year. That amount would actually be refined. Now this page, this recovery chairperson, these are the outcomes of the Auditor General. Now, if you look at them at face value, chairperson, take education for instance, you would actually say that in the FY12 and the FY13, which was the last year which was audited, you'll see that education, it says it got into two disclaimers. But the point that I would make, chairperson, is that this time around, education was able to reconcile the queries and dealt with all of them in the irregular expenditure. 162, which it could not explain in the past, right, in the previous year, right? This time around, it was able to explain the full amount. If you look at the immovable assets, 102 million of immovable assets, they were overstated. And that it was able this time around to reduce that to 36. Look at, of course, there are still documents, right? Because I did make a point that procurement has been a problem in the province there. There are still documents, education, that it's not able to get. Hence, then that becomes a limiting of scope for the AG. And if you do that, then you will get a disclaimer. But at least we know where the problem is. Some of the areas which were a problem have been addressed. If you look at health, you'll see that health, yes, again, it did get a disclaimer. But if you look at the movement, right, it could not explain the irregular spending of about 73 million. And it dealt with that completely to the satisfaction of the Auditor General. And again, if you look at the receipts, that problem, again, we'll talk about that problem when we talk about the sustainability in health, because the issue of revenue and receipts that happen in the districts are a challenge within the department, and that is a reflection of that. We shall talk to it, even though you can see that there is a movement. Only 21 million that is not able to explain. And yes, there was a limitation of scope there. As I said, there are documents that are in the district. But if you look at the treasury, as I said, again themselves, they nearly got their clean audit, except that they dealt with those accounts that I mentioned. Public Works has also itself, it has actually moved, right, dealt with the irregular expenditures. And again, with Public Works, you'll see that some of the challenges that it had was the revenue that it receives from renters, right, in those two departments. That area is an area which was a problem in terms of exactly reconciling the revenue, the revenue and receipt and receivables, right? And that problem is a problem that has been addressed, but there are interactions between themselves with the Department of Health and Social Development, which are the officials who are actually using those renters. and the improvement was in the roads and transport. Now, Chairperson, I just wanted to leave that there and actually ask that HOD just quickly just to talk to the details of the recovery in the treasury itself. And then I'll just come back in terms of the sustainability.
Thank you, Mr. Tong, Honourable Chair. I'll try and be brief. It's about 18 slides, but I think I'll just pick up the key issues. I think the first was key to us was to restructure the treasury, to look at the structure of the treasury that was done through DPSA. We did receive a generic structure from National Treasury and the DPSA. Although it came up with 583 posts and the Chief Administrator still feels that's a bit big, and we need to trim that down to about 350 to 380 posts with people with the right skills in the right places. So we're looking at that currently. Filling the critical posts, as the Administrator said, I was appointed in mid-December. Then we've got five senior general managers in terms of the structure. One has been appointed. The Chief Audit Executive that's been vacant for about 2 years also now been appointed, will assume duty 1 December. And then we struggled to find a Senior General Manager for Financial Governance and the Chief Operating Officer, but they've been re-advertised and shortlistings are taking place next week, so we trust that we can have those filled before the end of the year. And then the Senior General Manager Assets and Liabilities will also be re-advertised, as that also did not come up with a suitable candidate. In terms of the GMs, three vacant posts there, two have been approved by the Minister, one has declined the offer, so we'll have to look at that in terms of the Municipal Finance one, and the General Manager assets still under consideration through the administrative team. In terms of improving the financial management skills and capacity building, we have done a skills audit. We've started in the Treasury, looking at all the CFO's offices in the province. The tender is only for Treasury, Health and Education currently. We piloted in Treasury just to see that the outcome of that assessment would give us what we need to identify the skills gaps. That report now has been finalized. We should receive it next week, and then we can move on to Education and Health to look at this. The project will roll out to all our departments, but we first concentrate on those under intervention. Then also through the administrative team, we've implemented what we call project-based learning, where it's a on-the-job training through an institute called the Winst Institute, and it's real public service training, looking at the South African public service and improving our skill sets within our middle management and senior management. And that's starting to bear its fruits now. National Treasury also helped us look at our chief risk officers, finding risk was a gap in the provincial administration, and that's also been taking place, was actually completed. Then, Chair, I think one key element that we're looking at as Treasury is to develop a CFO support team in the Treasury, much like National Treasury got the Technical Assistance Unit or TAO. We're really limited as Treasury to give that intervention when a department needs some support, and the Minister has approved a 2-year contract for five senior officials to come in and really just play that support role so that we can deploy people where there are challenges within departments on a very short term notice period. Then, Chair, the Administrator touched on in the transversal contracts. We're looking at our supply chain issues. We have completed what we call the labour saving device tender or the photocopying tender, where all departments partake in one tender, not running around for quotations. The banking contract is also in place, started 1 June, and that's running very well. The other area that we're looking at currently is the travel and accommodation. It's a big spend in the Limpopo province, and a lot of that's done on a quotation basis. One or two departments have got contracts in place, but we felt that we can benefit from economies of scale there, and that contract should be out before the end of the year for advert. Then the other area that we found wanting was the supply chain issues. We've reviewed the supply chain policy. It's about to go through the approval process now. And then we've developed what we call standard operating procedures for the whole supply chain process, from demand right through to payments, and including checklists just to guide accounting officers before they sign off various documents to ensure that the whole supply chain process was followed, and if not, that those exceptions are documented and people held accountable through signing off those checklists for approval by the accounting officer. This should be completed by October, and we hope to roll that out from 1 November. Obviously, training and implementation will be provided to all departments. We've taken a decision to roll this out to all our provincial departments, not only those under administration, and we feel this is a transversal issue that needs serious attention in the paper. So the next big issue was the system that the administrator spoke to in the paper. We've got a system called FINIST, which is really, if I can call it, a glorified order printing system at this stage. It's only used to print our orders. It was integrated into BAS previously, but with the change in the BAS codes and the SCOA, that system could not keep pace, and we had to then do away with it, but we did not have an alternative to printing orders, and we still use that. And there's that disjuncture between our orders and our payment system, BAS. We then approached National Treasury to implement LOGOS that has been granted. We have done environmental reviews within Treasury, Health and Education. Currently we're rolling it out in Treasury. We have identified though that we need a much bigger team to roll that out effectively within the Limpopo administration. It's taking a bit long in a small department like Treasury, and we feel that we don't have the 18 to 2 year period to roll that out. So we have entered into discussions with our CETA provincial office to provide some technical project management support, and we will be engaging the national CEO of CETA also to assist us in that area. Chair, then to move to LOGOS, it's quite an involved process in that you have to recapture, it's a lot of data capturing, where you have to recapture every single asset, every single stock item before you can start processing. And we feel that that process will take a bit long to implement LOGOS in all our departments. And we're looking at getting a transitional period or a transitional database system which can really just arrest or secure the current asset register that we have. As you'll note there, it's only really those our three big departments that have still got issues on assets. As Limpopo, we currently use Excel spreadsheets to maintain our asset registers, and there's no audit trail. So AG will audit the full population every single year, because you can never have comfort that what was there last year, you can trace the changes. People can go into the system, change it, and we won't know exactly who changes. So this system will just give us an audit trail, and it will have a scanning facility. What we have found, a lot of transposition of numbers when people go and manually write down the barcodes. All assets are barcoded, and this system will just make it much more effective and allow us to do two stock takes in the year to ensure completeness of the assets prior to capturing into the LOGOS system. Then the other area that the administrator touched on, about 70% of our procurement is done through quotations. And that's a big gap in our controls. And the gap starts with the supply database. Departments have got manual databases that are open to abuse. And again, no audit trail to see who's added, subtracted particular suppliers on databases. So we have applied to National Treasury to allow us to implement a centralized supplier database that will be managed through the provincial treasury, and all departments will then have access to their suppliers, and in that way we can ensure that suppliers do have their tax clearances and rotation is taking place with the right authority rather than people entering into some collusive arrangements at the lower levels. So then the surplus budget, I think the administrator spoke adequately too. As a province previously, we never budgeted for a surplus, really to just give a little bit of a cushion to cushion any unfunded issues that might arise. In the previous year, we managed to do the 748, which ultimately ended into 821 to finance the unauthorized. And in the current year, 735, of which 640 has been set aside for unauthorized spending. So we're comfortable that if there is a shock, we can at least try and address or support that before we hit the real overrun. Then in the unauthorized chair, with your permission, I won't go through it. I think the administrator touched on that adequately. Maybe just in terms of the slide on page 19, you'll note at the bottom of that slide that a majority of our unauthorized is COE, or compensation of employees, and a lot of that happened within the Department of Education. But it's very comforting to see that education COE budget is now stabilized. Education did have a small unauthorized within their main divisions, but as a vote, they didn't overspend in the year that's just closed off. And we're very comfortable that the COE is under control and that unauthorized is now something of the past. We do have something that I'm sure the administrator in education will speak to around the reactivation of the rural allowance, and that's the budget pressure that we're looking at in the education projections. But we are engaging with them to see how we can accommodate that through the adjustment budget. And then health, again, in the 12-13 financial year, only one department overspent its entire vote, and that was the Department of Health, by 21 million. So again, you can see a significant reduction from where we came, 2.7 billion, 175 million in the previous year, and now 21 million. So within the own allocations, the revenue fund is really only going to, well, we hope SCOPA supports our recommendations made to them that only 21 million should be funded through the revenue fund and that the department should carry the balance, because they haven't overspent their vote. Their money is still available through the underspending in other programs. Then, Chair, I think the one key issue in Limpopo is the COE, for the compensation of employees. Where the province, we at 69% of our budget has been spent on salaries, and we really feel that is crowding out our expenditure as we move forward, and that we have to reverse that slowly but surely. We have instituted what we call an HRTT, or Human Resource Task Team, in the Office of the Premier, to make sure that any appointments are actually needed and that it does come through provincial treasury to ensure that funds are in fact in place. As treasury, we put in a little task team to really analyse the cost drivers around the COE, and we have extracted data going back to 2009 for all our departments, and are busy analysing that and identifying exactly what are the cost drivers. Is it overtime? Is it the rural allowances in Limpopo? Is it the excess teachers? Is it the temporary teachers, etc.? So we trust that we can arrest that. Although we funded it now, we really feel that must be reversed. In terms of the audit assistance program, Chair, I think the administrator touched on that. We did have that slight regression, and really we're looking at that. We have appointed a consultancy team, PwC, Rokoma, Consortium, to help the province, especially the three big departments, to really address those key issues, and they've started with that project as we speak, so we'll hope to see improvement as we're going through, and we're looking at all the key findings through the AG's project to reverse those audit outcomes. Chair, I think also it's just right to touch on our municipalities. Also not very impressive when we come to our clean audit 2014. Very stagnant. A lot of our municipalities have still got disclaimed opinions. We have had discussions with the AG recently, in fact last week, with the Executive Council of Kotla, and he has expressed confidence that can now be reversed and that he's seen the light at the end of the tunnel. So through Provincial Treasury and Coxter, we have also signed an MOU to assist our municipalities and identify the roles and responsibilities to take that forward in the new year. So then in terms of cash management, I think this was very key in the intervention. Our controls have been strengthened tremendously there. Each department is given their cash allocation, exactly which date they're going to receive how much money, and they have to manage within those funds. Each pay run is then passed on to Treasury for sign-off and processing, so the run before it gets pushed off through Treasury, we have the accounting officer and the CFO signing off, confirming that those are the payments to be made, and we ensure that the payments made are within their cash allocations. So the risk of overspending within the goods and services and capital payments environment is very, very small. Where there is still a small risk around CAE, because that payment does release itself and we as Treasury cannot stop that tape, but we do have weekly updates on what is the run that's going to go through personnel so we can make sure that the department does have adequate cash going through that process. We've also reduced the number of payments. I think we've reported this previously to the committee, that we only pay twice a month through the BAS system now, and four times from PERSAL, that being the 15th, the supplementary run, the educators on the 22nd, and the month end run. I think, Chair, just to touch on the cash position, it is very favourable, although it does have a negative consequence in that service delivery is not taking place as we'd have liked it to be. The 4.2 billion, really 2.7 billion of that is conditional grant money that is still in our reserve bank account, money that's been given to us as a province from National, which we've not allocated to our departments. 920 million is the surrender that must be made from last year's underspending to the National Treasury. 286 million is rollovers that we have to then provide to our departments on conditional grants, and 150 million rollover on equal share, which leaves us with about 140 odd million that we have as cash surplus as we speak. Although the 286 and the 150 is just moving from one account to the other, so we at least addressed in the overdrafts or the cash pressures within the other departments. Thanks, Chair. I'll stop there.
Chairperson, I thought that though the departments will actually be making their presentations on the details on the recovery, right, on those different floors, we thought that we should just outline this improvement in finances, how it has translated in some improvement in those light departments, and those light departments don't get into detail. The example which I wanted to talk to is education. Now, you'll see that in education, they were able to appoint 2,000 permanent teachers. And they were able to reduce temporary teachers from 200 and 2,544. As at last month, they were telling us that they only have got 55 temporary teachers. Now, they also had a problem around rural allowances. At some stage, the province stopped the payment of rural allowances to about 7,000 teachers. Now, they got pressure from SATU, right, but they had to reinstate that. And that 7,000 teachers, they were allowances, they were able to pay them. Now, we also did a headcount of learners in the Boko and also the educators, right? That exercise, we did it through with STEPSA, and the results that are coming out there, right? They are really encouraging. Right? They are really encouraging. Now, and they even talk to the state of the infrastructure in those departments. And our planning, right, would then be informed by what is coming out of that assessment, that verification. Now, if you look at the side of service delivery, right, you will see that when it comes to the textbooks, for the academic year 2013, that is this current academic year, and even in the previous one, they were able to deliver the textbooks this current year, and for 2014, we are told that there is significant progress that has been made for the books for next year. And department will get into details, the interval. When it comes to the norms and standards, remember that the norms and standards is about the maintenance and the running of schools. There are transfers that are actually made. In the past, they used to finance that at about 72%, right, in terms of the standard. That has actually increased to, it was 66%, now it was standing at 76. Albeit we are still grappling with that because we are engaging with the department because there are schools that are called no-fee schools, which also depend on these amounts. We are engaging with the Department of Education to say how do we actually step that up. And in the beginning, we thought that over a period of 2 years, that would actually be able to be financed fully, but we'll be engaging with themselves. That is still a challenge that is still there. If you take health, the Department of Health, I must say, Chairperson, Department of Health is a complex department. Now, themselves, they have found difficulties to attract competent staff under the office of the CFO. It has been a challenge to the point where after advertising and interviewing and without success, they got someone from the National Health Department to be seconded in there. But they are able, in terms of the enablers, they were able to appoint 33 hospital CEOs. Remember that the district management is the biggest problem in the Department of Health. Because if you don't get that interface correctly between the head office and the district, right, you'll always have a problem. Right. But at least they are able to actually to appoint the CEOs in a number of hospitals. And even there, we've done a headcount in health. And that headcount has just been, in fact, it is at a stage where now it is being analyzed. We got a preliminary report, I think last month, right, on that headcount. But the state SA is actually finalizing that analysis in health. We'll be able to see what are the numbers in terms of the core staff, that is professionals, and also other people who are providing service within the Department of Health. Now, one of the good things that has actually happened, right, that is that we've got the biggest increase in financing medicine, right, in the country, in Limpopo, right. That is also due to the fact the improvement in the finances that we've actually achieved. Now, one of the problems on the service delivery there, one of the problems that health had was actually to attract and retain doctors and nurses. Right. One of the problems was the fact that it was the absence of accommodation. We managed to actually to build a complex which is able to accommodate about 300 professional staff at this point in time. Which is also an area which we believe that is a milestone there. Now, there were 38 boilers. Remember that the boilers, Chairperson, in health, right, is the nerve center. Because when you talk about theaters, right, when you talk about clinics, when you talk about warm water, right, you need those boilers. Right. Now, when the intervention was there, you'll find that area was a serious problem. Right. We are proud now to be able to say 9 hospitals have got those boilers being repaired. Of course, one of the challenges was in the medicine. I've just touched it there. We provided a funding which we believe is adequate, but they still do have challenges in terms of the stock levels. But the province has actually adopted an approach where the medicine is delivered directly, right? Because there were a lot of anecdotes as we were engaging with the department that some of these medicines are not delivered straight to the directly to where they're supposed to be delivered, right? So we had to find a way of actually saying how we manage that situation of delivering the medication. In public works, they had a serious challenge in terms of the support to the line department. Now, after a long struggle of getting professional for construction, they were able to recruit those numbers of professionals. Nine professionals in the areas of project management, and also engineers, quantity surveyors, chief architects. That area has been an area which has been such a difficulty to actually to get people in public works, but at least they've actually moved in that area. Now they are also working with IDT. Because of the lack of capacity, right, in the delivering of infrastructure in education, we actually had to find an arrangement where the IDT work closely with the Department of Public Works, right, at this point in time. I'll come back to this when we deal with the sustainability chairperson. Now, one of the big challenges that is, and the crime in public works, it has always been the supply chain procurement, right? And there they had challenges in terms of competence of staff, right? And what they have actually done there, they have actually taken a number of their staff to training, right? The seniors, they are under that project that we mentioned earlier on, right, which is an executive management course which they are dealing with, and other staff, they are on the accounting. Now, on the service delivery, there are two areas which are a serious challenge, are the leases, right, in the Department of Public Works. Now, at this point in time, we've got a team that is working to actually to establish exactly what is the state of the properties in the province there, right? There's a team that is actually working in that area. Other area which was such a serious problem, it was around the immovable assets. And again, I'll come back to this when I will talk about the sustainability of the recovery. Road and transport, and road and transport is a department that was placed a lot by corruption around infrastructure, and themselves, we believe that problem is a problem that has been handed over, right? We'll actually see how it is dealt with under the criminal cases, and they handed over about 30 cases, right, to be dealt with as part of the that governance, or actually making sure that there are consequences, which is one of the outcomes, right? The challenge that the province, the department had was around the governance within the RAL, right? Remember, the RAL, right, is one phenomenon which is not common in any other provinces, but in the POCO, right? The department, we actually asked them to investigate, and I'm sure when they get into detail, to investigate a best model for delivering welfare roads. Now, that is an area which is we believe that is critical in the department there. If it can be put right, it will actually be able to address some of the problems within that sector. One of the big problems in the Limpopo generally is the maintenance. It doesn't matter which department you are talking about, maintenance is the challenge, right? But we are working with the Department of Transport, because within the RAL itself, right, they have got qualified, right, staff. We need to be able to talk to that and say, what is it that, how those staff, they would actually be utilized to address the maintenance generally, which is a general problem within the report. Now, I'm not dealing with the governance, the chairperson, because that part is the part that I say in disciplinary cases we've dealt with last time, as the chair actually outlined, and in the criminal cases they will actually be dealt with after our presentation. So I will not deal with that. I just want to come to this part here, which is a part which is critical. Having given the recovery, right, and of course, the department will be talking to the recovery as to what is it that has been recovered and improved in the departments there, right? But the question will always arise: how will this recovery be sustained? That will always be a critical question, and this is the question which I wanted to talk to it. Now, what we believe in, Chairperson, is that, move to the next slide there. What we believe, Chairperson, in is that there are so many problems in the system that we identified, and there are so many improvements that are happening. The question is, we do understand we will not be able to address all the problems in Limpopo, but what are those few projects or capabilities that if they can be built, they will address the greater problems in Limpopo? Right. What are those things? And those things, right, I want to take you to the mountain, to the board today. Because we believe that those areas, if those five areas which are on the extreme right, they are addressed, right, we believe that will make an impact, right, and sustain whatever recovery that has actually been done. I wanted to talk to the delivery of infrastructure. The infrastructure delivery, Chairperson, if you compare Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, and Gauteng, you'll see that the total budget in the Congo is about 2 billion. And it is the second lowest allocation in the country. Because in KwaZulu-Natal, they've got about 7 billion. In Gauteng, they have got 4 billion. But when you look at the spending, you will see that the spending is the second lowest spending, even though we have got the lowest allocation, but it has got the lowest spending in the country. The question is, what could that be? Could be the reason? The reason there is structural. That area is an area that needs to be addressed. For instance, if you look at the very last column, there we are talking about the skill set to deliver infrastructure. What we are saying there, because we have tried to recruit technical skills, this department can give a history, Chairperson, of the attempts that they have made to recruit, right, without success. Even though I've just said Public Works has been able to recruit, but if you look at the number of projects that need to be delivered, you'll find that's a drop in an ocean. Now, what did we do? We brought in the Department of DPSA and said, DPSA, you have issued a circular, right, on the OSDs, right, as to exactly how you should recruit. And these departments have attempted and failed to recruit the appropriate skills. We then said that we need to have a way of addressing this matter, this matter, because we are almost convinced that there are no professionals out there in the market who are waiting to be attracted into government. Right? We then agreed that perhaps what needs to happen, let us centralize the recruiting of skills. Let's centralize the recruiting of skills. And that exercise will be an exercise that will actually ensure that any mistakes that are being done in the actual recruitment, those mistakes are actually eliminated, so that we can go over the hurdle that there are people out there who are waiting to be recruited. But in the meantime, what should happen? You'll see in the first column, there we believe that the province, it needs to begin to have a system of use of PMUs. PMUs is project management units. In the past, yes, these project management units, they were abused. And I'm sure when they talk about those criminal cases, they will give an outline of how those, what was the impact of, the negative impact of those PMUs. But we believe, Chairperson, that the use of PMUs is an answer. But what must now happen is that we must have what we term management PMUs in those departments which are not dealing with the construction. For instance, in the Department of Education, its construction is happening in public works. We believe they must have a management PMU. I'll explain this. Even education, they must have that. And we believe that even the treasury, it must have that. These management PMUs, their sole responsibility will actually be making sure that there are proper plans that are in place. There is the monitoring of the construction itself is in place. Now, because one of the experiences that we have found during this intervention, Chairperson, is that we had an investigation that we did in one of the departments, which is COXTA. Albeit it is not under intervention, but the Treasury is responsible for the oversight. We actually found that the actual monitoring of the houses, RDP houses that are built there, and the quality of those houses, you'll find that that is not being done. All what they rely on, they rely and say there is an agency called NHBRC. No, NHBRC, they are doing these investigations, and then they give us certificates, and therefore ourselves, anything done by themselves, we accept it as gospel. It cannot be. We then send a team, ourselves and Treasury, to go in there through the Department of Public Works to go and check. Right? You can actually see that monitoring does need to be done. Right? Because there's no value for money in some of these projects that are there. Right? I'm therefore making the point that those PMUs are key, because they will actually fulfill that responsibility in the line department. That is actually key. And of course, some of the planning, one of the exercises that we did is that we have found that we are busy constructing, whether it's a hospital or it's a school, right, in the rural areas, but you'll find that because they use the boreholes, the life of the boreholes 5 years, and yet we are building a structure which will be supposed to be there for more than 5 years. Which actually means that the integration of that planning is something that needs to be looked into. And those PMUs, they should be able to come out with a sound plan, right, which will look into this integration. Now, we therefore believe that to deliver infrastructure, we must use this system. We must use this system of the PMUs, right? Which will be something which will be rolling out. And if you look at the second column, Chairperson, one of the things, take the Department of Education for the schools to be functional. We have just said that spending is very low in infrastructure. What is it that can be done at a large scale such that a school can be functional? One of the beliefs that we are making there is that they must deal with the problem of toilets. And that cannot be a very difficult project, a complex project like building classrooms and all that will take a long time. Right. Now, in the Department of Education, we say that focus must be a focus that is engaged, right? Because we believe that if that can be done, it will actually make these schools to be functional. If you take hospitals, some of the hospitals, if you go and look at the maintenance inside and outside, and those exercises are exercises that can be done to make sure that hospitals are functional by mere appearance. Right, and those are not difficult, and we actually say that project is a project that must be engaged. Right. Now, it's critical that we must then talk, we must be certain about the implementation PMUs. And we are saying those implementation PMUs, they must be put under the Department of Public Works. Right. But however, we must take into account the reality of the capacity for those things to be done within public works. Yes, public works is working with the IDT. In the past, the IDT used to report elsewhere, but now they report to them directly. But the question will still be the capacity. We need to look into the face, the reality, that these construction PMUs, you may, for a temporal period, probably still have them within the line department for a short while, with a view of phasing them out. But at this point in time, we are very clear in terms of what types of resource that are required inside there. And that resource, we are convinced, Chairperson, that you will not find it amongst the government officials. And that reality is a reality that we must actually find a way of buying that skill. If you take the engineer, professional engineer, they are not easy to get by, but they are available out there in the market. If you take professional project managers, not easily found in government, but they are available out there, right? And even planners, right? We therefore say that we do need to have this balancing act, right? As we try to strengthen this, the public works, don't rule out the point of actually having implementing the PMU within the line department, but be clear exactly what it does. Right? And we also make the point that I'm leaving the issue of infrastructure. There, that must be put right, and if that can be put right, we believe that sustainability, of the system will come by, right, and deal with it in the manner that we are actually suggesting. Now, one of the problems, right, in the Limpopo, in terms of sustainability, is competitive procurement. If you don't put a competitive procurement, right, the system will not be sustainable. Right. Now, for that system to be sustained, we are saying there, for instance, look at the first column. What we are doing in the purpose there is that We say we do need to have a common supplier database. We made a point, an assessment there, that over 70% of procurement that is happening, right, is procurement that is happening through quotations. And quotations, it's one of a tool that is abused. Now, we are then saying we are putting a common supplier database. That supplier database will be the only database that is actually used. Right. And it will control that problem. Right. And that is critical to be able to control that big chunk of procurement. But one of the things that is happening is that we need to do procurement differently. If you look at that first column there, Chairperson, we are saying we have got pilots that are being done in health to procure patient food, to procure the waste, that is medical waste, and to procure laundry. Right. And the way in which that procuring is happening is what we term end-to-end. It's a procurement that starts from the actual advertising as we know them, but up to the stage where the implementation of that which is procured, right, is done by the same people. I exaggerate this example, right, and say in the Department of Health, for instance, you need a floor. Only a floor that deals with the procuring of food. Themselves, they will start from the beginning, advertising, up to the stage of the delivering of the food in all the hospitals. If there is a problem that is found with the lack of food, absence of food, the late delivery of food, don't look anywhere else, go to that floor. That floor should be able to answer everything related to that activity. And that activity is not a small activity, Chairperson. I mean, if you take the issue of the security, right? Do you know that activity is one of the biggest activities that are delivered in the Department of in government generally? You can literally, and in fact, you'll find that service it will run into. For 4 billion rand, that. And that service is a service that you can create an end-to-end process that have people who are only working in managing security from the start up to the implementation, and also dealing with the service providers who are not actually providing that service as it is intended. At this point in time, you'll find that when these service providers are appointed, thereafter nobody looks after them. They do as they deem fit. And you'll only meet with them at the time when the service is not delivered or when you are in court. Right. Simply because that service is not managed. Now, you will see what we are saying there. For that procurement to be sustainable, you need to perform to identify certain items, the ones that are listed there, and themselves, they must be running the way in which we are suggesting. Now, and if you look at the second column, one of the things that is absent, right, is the actual manual, the actual step-by-step, right, which is what is actually being put in place. Because at the moment, you'll find that different departments deal with the procuring that the procedure in different ways, because they read the legislation differently, right, and they interpret it differently. At this point in time, we are actually saying there should be a process manual that is being put in place in all the five departments that we're dealing with. Of course, one of the things that we must not leave out is actually to make sure that there is the capability to ensure that, that there are consequences, right, on the people's side. Now, if you take the assets, assets is another area which we believe that, that one of the five areas that we believe that, that if those areas are actually put right, that the recovery will actually be sustained. Now, we've actually made a point that most of the departments there, Chairperson, the assets, the management of assets was qualified by the auditors, all of them. Right. Now, at this point in time, we are saying those assets, we need to be able to have a system that, the local system that is being rolled out. But in the interim, what is it that is being put in place in the interim, right? Because we need to be able to capture all the assets that are there. We are proposing a way of how these assets must actually be captured so that when the local is actually rolled out, it will actually be able to be rolled out in a manner that is quicker. But I'm trying to write a Chairperson on these systemic problems. The other area is the records, is the records management. Now, the records, Chairperson, is a serious problem. That's why you find that these departments have been displayed. Is a problem of the limitation of scope. Limitation of scope, it simply means that when the documents are required, they are nowhere to be found. One of the things that we say they need to be actually to be in place now, right, is that all these records, at least starting with those that we are working with for payments, those records, they must be captured in a microfishing or microfilming system, right? We must begin to introduce something like that, because at least we will be able to know what are the documents that were processed at the time a specific payment was made, and those documents, what happened to those documents, there is a process where those documents now are being archived in the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture, right? That is the fiscal document. I mean, if you go to education, you'll find that there are rows and rows of files that are lying all over the place. And it's sometimes the reason why you'll find that those documents don't simply just work, right? Now, we are on the one side dealing with the microfishing. On the other side, we say the hard documents, they must be kept safe and kept safe through the archiving. And that process is the process that will happen between the light department. And in that way, we believe that will actually go a long way to deal with the loss of documentation, which is a serious problem in the department. Now, can I just deal with the structural problems where we talk about CFO offices and talk about district management? Serious problem, Chairperson, I'm saying, at this point in time, as we speak, you'll find that the level of competence in the CFO offices still leaves a lot to be desired in the CFO offices. And there, it's going to be critical that we are saying to Treasury, Treasury, as departments are recruiting, they put in place what we term CFO support program. There, we must be able to provide high-level skills, right? People at a DDG, a chief director, and those people be seconded. For instance, if you take the Department of Health, Chairperson, it doesn't matter where you get the CFO. CFO alone in the Department of Health, right, will be difficult to make that department turn around. It does need more than one person.
Yeah.
And we say to Treasury, you must provide through your CFO support program officials who would work as anchors around the CFO in a healthy environment. And that program is a program that could be, that should be sustained over a period of time. Right. And that is very key in a department like health. Now, if you look at, I spoke about the Auditor General, the improvements of the opinions in Auditor General. Albeit some of them are still the same, but I've tried to outline how they improved in reality. But the point there, Chairperson, is that because of the sense or absence thereof in the CFO offices, right? That project will actually experience a lot of problems. Right. And it's an area that needs to be addressed. Right. If, as we speak now, the intervention is pulled out, that area will be a serious challenge for the next FY14. But at this point in time, we are putting in place to make sure that those CFO offices are strengthened so that exercise is actually I think I've dealt with that. With the district, I'll just say, Chairperson, I've made a point with health. Its problems are in the district. Right, I've made that point and it's captured there. Okay? The next thing. That will be a conclusion, Chairperson. We believe that between now and the time when the intervention is pulled out, it's going to be key that there could be a close working between us and the intervention team and the Office of the Premier. Right? And in that area, we believe that some of those, that sustainability, that recovery will actually be sustained. And the things that we say that need to be in place, those things, at least some of them, they will be initiated. We also believe that Treasury must begin to actually to earmark resources to finance the sustainability program, right? Because we believe if those five things can be put right, a lot of problems can actually be resolved, right? And the last point there, Chairperson, is the strengthening of the capability in the Treasury itself, right? That part is very key, right? And also the CFO offices, right, in the department, that part is also very key. Now, those are the comments that you wanted just to make, Chairperson, in terms of the sustainability of recovery. And in recovery, departments will actually be talking to it, but we believe that those five things, they need to be put right to actually make sure that the recovery will be successful. Right. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Tom.